I'm Tom McDonald, and this is NewsWorks Tonight. Dave Heller is off tonight. Some of Pennsylvania's schools are still feeling the effects of this year's historically delayed state budget. As Keystone Crossroads' Kevin McCory reports, many of the state's most distressed districts are finding it harder to borrow money.
The state has a program that guarantees loans for school districts that don't have great credit ratings themselves. Essentially, it says, hey, if the district can't pay its bill, the state will pay the lender out of the pot of cash the district gets from Harrisburg. But if there's no state budget, there's no pot of cash.
We had recognized a trend of late budgets at the state level, which render the program ineffective for large portions of the year.
John Sugden is a senior director at S&P Global, which in December withdrew its rating of that Intercept program. Now, even though the budget is finally wrapped up, the rating agency's confidence in state government has not grown.
So at this point, we've told the market and our clients that we don't expect to reinstate the program.
So that means the 57 districts that had been taking advantage of the program are in a tighter position and will either be locked out of the market entirely or forced to pay higher interest rates. These districts include Philadelphia, Reading, Coatesville, Hazleton, and Erie, where Jay Baddams is superintendent.
Our bank that we've done most of our work with over the years would not give us a definitive answer.
Baddams says the district can't get through the summer without short-term borrowing. If shut out of the market, he'll have to ask the state for an advance, which is a potential trigger for moving into state recovery status.
So we're teetering on the verge of insolvency.
Top Republicans and Democrats say they hope to pass a budget on time this year and win back the faith of the ratings agencies. S&P says at this point, that won't be good enough. It wants to see specific legislation that marks a major commitment to the program. Keystone Crossroads, Kevin McCory.
Keystone Crossroads is a statewide initiative reporting on the challenges facing Pennsylvania cities. WHYY leads the four-station initiative. Wilmington, Delaware is among the most violent small cities in the country. Gun violence has claimed 11 lives so far this year, and 54 people were injured in shootings. Most of these victims end up at Christiana Hospital in Newark. Doctors and nurses there are volunteering their time for an unusual program to prevent more violence. WHYY's Mike and Scott reports.
When they first walk into a classroom at Christiana Hospital, most of the high school students have a continuous eye roll on their faces, as in, why am I here? But their expressions begin to change as Chaz Molinas, violence prevention coordinator for the Christiana Trauma Program, tells them about Brandon Brinkley.
Brandon ended up there at Howard Young. I think at the time it might have been called Gander Hill, right? You guys know where that is? Yeah, you don't want to go there. Trust me.
Brinkley was treated at this hospital after he was shot in 2008. He was 25.
And these are the locations of the wounds.
And then the lecture is interrupted.
Attention, please. Trauma code.
The students are quickly ushered into an operating room setting, a room usually used to train medical professionals. Trauma doctors and nurses rush in and they suit up for surgery. Then a very realistic-looking mannequin representing Brandon Brinkley is wheeled in. The team begins frantic efforts to save his life.
All right, incision. There's a lot of blood.
But the wounds are too severe.
I do not have any cardiac activity without compression.
All right, guys. We've done everything we can. This is Brandon Brinkley. Time of death. 9:28.
The OR goes dark, and the students sit in stunned silence. Trauma surgeon Sandra Medinilla plays the team leader for this demonstration. She says she wants to help stem the rise of gun violence that has become such a big part of her work.
We see them almost every day. I was just on call yesterday, and I had two. One survived and one did not.
Afterwards, the students discuss what they've seen. They talk about making good choices, staying out of trouble as much as possible. 18-year-old high school senior Calvin Copeland says the program was an eye-opener.
Watch who you're around. Like, don't be in a bad situation so you won't end up in a trauma center, basically.
The victim's mother, Robin Brinkley White, helped make this program possible in her son's memory. She attends many of the sessions, which is painful for her, but she hopes it makes a difference.
Even if you get one, if you get two, we want them all. But if we get a few of them, it'll help.
I'm Mike and Scott, WHYY News.
Stare into the sky tonight and you might notice that Mars is more visible than usual. The red planet is currently in its closest approach to us in 11 years. In this week's edition of Sky Talk, NewsWorks Tonight's Dave Heller and Franklin Institute Chief Astronomer Derek Pitts begin by parsing fact and fiction surrounding Earth's planetary neighbor.
Derek, will we be seeing more red than usual tonight?
Last week, if we had been observing Mars, it would have been 700,000 miles closer than it is right now. But still, it's still at its closest approach in quite a long time.
Though regardless of how close Mars comes to us, it never looms as large as the moon.
You know, for the last number of years, maybe almost a decade, there has been a persistent rumor that runs around on the internet. And it shows up around August the 15th, August the 20th or so, warning folks that the planet Mars is going to appear as large as the full moon. Now, Mars can never appear to be the size of the full moon in our sky. In order for it to do that, it would have to shift its orbit, and that would be a very major dynamic problem in the entire solar system. So we should not expect that at any time in the near future or distant future that Mars will ever appear to be the size of the full moon.
Derek, I understand an observatory in Chile is weighing black holes.
Yes.
What kind of a scale do they use?
Well, it's a really interesting scale indeed, because the objects themselves provide the machinery for that. And a group of astronomers working through University of California, Irvine, has been measuring a black hole about 75 million light years away from us. So the first thing you have to do is find the black hole. You can do that by looking at how the black hole affects other material around it. In this particular instance, we're talking about a galaxy, NGC 1332, and this is a black hole located at the core of the galaxy. Well, that means there are other gases swirling around this core and around the black hole that could be measured if you could see them. Radio telescopes can do this work quite well. The radio telescope that Barth and his team have been using is the Atacama Large Millimeter Array Telescope that's located in northeastern Chile. Astronomers have to identify something upon which the black hole can have an effect. How about some passing clouds of gas that are near the core of the black hole? Well, if the motion of those gases in orbit around the black hole can be measured accurately, and you can determine the distance away from the core of the black hole, then you can figure out how much of an effect the black hole is having on that cloud of gas. Hence, you can interpret the mass of the black hole in question. In this case, the ALMA telescope, as it's called, this radio telescope, consists of 66 very, very high precision radio dishes. This instrument has the capability to be able to make very, very fine measurements of the motion of this gas cloud, enough so that astronomers are fairly confident that the actual weight, if you will, or the mass of that black hole is about 660 million times that of our sun. For this kind of galaxy, somewhat typical, but the means with which to measure it is atypically ingenious.
Can this radio telescope alternately be used to make calculations on the black hole that presumably exists in the center of our Milky Way galaxy?
We can certainly use it to make observations about our galaxy as well as other galaxies around this region of space without much difficulty at all. So, sure, we can use it to examine clouds of gas and dust anywhere and determine what's going on hidden behind those curtains.
Thanks, Derek.
My pleasure, Dave.
Derek Pitts, Chief Astronomer at the Franklin Institute. He joins us each week at this time on NewsWorks Tonight.
Still ahead, a group of veterans brave bad weather to find closure at Arlington National Cemetery.
I'm trying to think of the name of the thing that they put over the wheelchair to keep the rain off you. We look like people from outer space.
That coming up as NewsWorks Tonight continues on WHYY. Welcome back to NewsWorks Tonight. I'm Tom McDonald in for Dave Heller. Honor Flight Network is a nonprofit dedicated to providing aging veterans with safe transportation to Washington, D.C. to visit the memorials honoring them and their fellow soldiers. This year, the Philadelphia Hub of Honor Flight sent 6 buses of local veterans to visit Arlington National Cemetery, the Korean War Memorial, and the World War II Memorial. Tonight, we hear from Andrew Schiavello, president of Honor Flight Philadelphia, who's helped transport 1,500 local veterans by bus since 2012. We'll also hear from retired Philadelphia Navy Yard worker and World War II veteran DeWitt Stewart of Media, who joined Honor Flight Philadelphia's most recent trip.
You know, you see a lot of charities on TV, but this one, when I saw it on TV, it resonated with me, and I said, hey, you know, let's do it. The World War II Memorial wasn't built until 60 years after the war, so a lot of these guys were already in their 80s, so they couldn't get down there, whether it be for financial reasons, health concerns. We decided to do it, and hey, let's get them down there. Every veteran, no matter what, gets a guardian to accompany them for safety and comfort. So I always tell the veteran, nothing disqualifies you coming on our trip unless the doctor says you can't travel. The last trip, we took 138 veterans along with 138 guardians, and I'd say 65% of them were World War II, so the rest of them were Korean conflict veterans. For a lot of them, it creates closure. We had one gentleman who was part of a tank division, and his tank was hit, and he was the only surviving member. They brought their bodies home to Arlington. And he said, Andrew, is there any way I could visit my buddies? So I called Arlington up. They came and met us with a car. And he took them to the grave. And he said, I've been waiting 73 years for that, to have closure. That's the magic of Honor Flight. You know, I look at the Freedom Mall, and I see World War II vets didn't come home. But when they see the Freedom Mall, it's the guy that was next to them. They start to cry. So the emotions come out. As they get off the bus, there's a little area, an open area. These women and men dress up in the 1940s garb, and they play swing music. And they'll just greet them. They'll kiss them on the lips with lipstick, and they'll have a lip mark. And they know that chuckles, and that brings back a pleasant memory. And then they'll dance with them a little bit, just, you know, 30 seconds, 45 seconds. Even if they're in a wheelchair, they'll come up to them and dance with them in the wheelchair. And that brings back the days when they went to the dances and had the R&R. Everything triggers a reaction, some negative because war is hell, but a lot of it positive, and that's what we always try to bring back, the positive of the war, if that exists.
I served in Italy for about 14 months, started at the Arno River campaign, and then the Po River Valley, and then up into the north, into the Apennines. I was a scout observer, maintained an observation post, escorted new troops to their destination, wherever they were going to be stationed, and of course directed artillery fire on enemy positions. It was not the best weather to make a visit, I'll put it that way. We were all in wheelchairs, and we had, I'm trying to think of the name of the thing that they put over the wheelchair to keep the rain off you. We looked like people from outer space. But really, I enjoyed seeing the memorial and talking with the other veterans who were with the group. I had never been to the Arlington Cemetery. And yes, I was very impressed with that, because that's the history of the military throughout the years.
That's World War II veteran DeWitt Stewart, who joined Honor Flight Philadelphia on a trip to Washington, D.C. We also heard from Andrew Schiavello, president of Honor Flight Philadelphia. War has always been part of our history, and stories about the war experience have populated our culture for as far as we can remember. The challenge for today's artist is to find a way of conveying the complexity of deployment and return and its impact on individuals in a fresh, compelling way. It took almost 4 years for jazz pianists Vijay Iyer and Michael Ladd to create a performance that reflects the experiences of post-9/11 soldiers. WHYY's Elizabeth Perez Luna reports.
Sleep is a rare luxury for some veterans. With sleep come dreams, and dreams often take the shape of nightmares. Still to write Holding It Down, librettist Michael Ladd decided to talk to dozens of veterans and ask them only about their dreams, not their experiences, nor rank or weapons, nothing else.
By focusing on the dreams of veterans, we would provide a space that is both shared by veteran and non-veteran. We all have dreams. And in those dreams, everything happens. It becomes its own landscape, its own dimension. Dreams also provide a very surreal landscape with no limits.
A canvas, so to speak, to weave a textured performance based on intense collaborations.
Wake up, look down and left boom, dog tags, make sure they're there, and jingle around your neck.
Not all the dreams were nightmares, fueled by trauma, said Ladd.
There were a lot of people who really insisted on talking about the other definition of dreams, dreams as aspirations. So that also fused into the project.
Rattle, crackle, rat-a-tat-tat, kaboom.
To build the performance, Ladd and musician V.J. Iyer looked for the individual stories, carefully staying clear of generalizations about veterans. So they did a lot of listening. Iyer says it was not about setting stories to music, but spending time, 3 years in fact, with veterans of color talking about their experiences and creating a sense of community. It became an experiment in profound collaboration.
Also the act of making music, building a sort of song cycle, is a therapeutic one. It's one where we have to listen in a new way to these stories. We have to give them the space they need to be heard.
Were these last 6 years real? Did that really happen?
The result is the Veterans Dream Project. And for its only presentation at the Kimmel Center, the stage transformed into a dark club-like atmosphere with musicians and performers sitting on high benches. They took turns telling their stories, led by Iyer's driving rhythms and compositions, and guided by Ladd's dynamic libretto and his own texts. Videotape interviews with veterans peppered the performance.
Unfortunately, I just don't sleep as often as I should because of it, because I don't like the dreams. So, I feel like I'm avoiding something.
400 pigs north of the mountain pass with a tragic doctor driving, made his escapes 200 years before.
Poetry and hip-hop narratives became the common language. In the end, it was a musical journey.
We wanted everyone to feel like they'd been hearing a musical experience, a series of songs. You know, even if the primary elements may have been born from poetry and born from jazz, but what we wanted you to feel at the end was that you had been on this melodic, lyrical, informative experience.
Iyer and Ladd found the stories less told, less known, and focused on what interested them, the experiences of people of color before and after the military. For instance, one of the veterans speaks about often identifying with the barren, poor neighborhoods where families lived in Afghanistan. Holding It Down was first recorded on CD in 2013, but by its own improvisational nature and the addition of Philadelphia veterans, the performance keeps changing. In the long run, for Iyer and Ladd, the idea is to create a deeper conversation and a sense of community. Ladd says it's even more than that.
After every war, there's a memory, and that memory lasts as long as the cerebral cortexes keep working in that given population. But even if the war did end, it would not end in the minds of any of the veterans on either side of the conflict, nor would it end for those who have to share space, intimate space and public space with these veterans. So if we don't find as many diverse ways of methods of talking about these experiences, it does nothing to better the situation.
And that works as much for the veterans coming home as for most of us, the people who want to bridge that civilian-military divide. Elizabeth Perez Luna, WHYY News.
That's all for tonight's show. NewsWorks Tonight is produced by Shai Binyakov and Kimberly Haas, with additional production today from Brett Rader. Find us on iTunes or listen back at newsworks.org. Thanks for joining us. I'm Tom McDonald for NewsWorks Tonight.